From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Duncan in for Beth Ruyak. The Trump administration spent days arguing that Congress had to act to end its policy of separating immigrant children and parents seeking asylum at the border until another executive order rescinded the policy. The move sent shockwaves through Washington, and the fallout continues this week. Well, here to help us unpack the controversy is political junkie Ken Rudin. Ken joins us from Rochester, New York this morning. Ken, welcome back to Insight.
Good morning, Beth.
So let's start by talking about the messaging over this issue. The White House tried to blame Democrats for the mess over the policy. Is there anything to that?
Well, I think for the past 17 months, the White House has been blaming the Democrats and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton for almost everything they can get their hands on. But this one especially doesn't seem to hold water, because this zero tolerance policy basically is the brainchild of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. And so for Jeff Sessions and others in the administration to be defending this policy, the separation of children from their families, and for President Trump to blame the Democrats on this while lauding the policy at the same time and then signing an executive order getting rid of it because he said it was not the proper policy, it just seems like the conflicting information, the conflicting signals you're getting from the White House is not only disrupting American immigration policy, but it's also upsetting Republicans who really don't know which way to go because they're not getting a straight answer from the president.
And members of Congress have been battling over bills to address the situation. Do any of them have a real chance of passing?
Well, that's another good question. I mean, last week there was a more conservative, more restrictive immigration, anti-immigration bill that was put out by Bob Goodlatte, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and that went down to defeat. There's one that was supposed to be voted on last week, but it's going to be postponed to this week. And this is the one that Speaker Paul Ryan and the Republican establishment, the Republican leadership, has been working on for the longest time, that basically would beef up border security. It would put the dreamers, you know, the children who were brought here illegally as children, they would put them on the road to citizenship. But conservatives call that amnesty. So for all the things that the Republicans have been working on to make happen in the issue of immigration policy, that may not pass either. And to complicate everything even further, President Trump, who last week said that I support what the House Republicans are doing 100%, tweeted on Friday that, look, let's stop wasting our time. Republicans should stop wasting their time on immigration. Let's wait to see what happens in November when supposedly Republicans there will be more House and Senate Republicans elected to office, and then we'll deal with immigration. So, again, the president is not on the same page as the Republicans, because we keep getting different messages from President Trump every other day, it seems.
And you addressed this a little bit, but if you could, just so we're clear, what is the real difference between the immigration bills? What's the top line difference?
The top line difference, of course, is that both of them include more money for President Trump's border wall with Mexico. I mean, that's what they have in common. The other thing, the one that this bill has that the more restrictive bill doesn't have, is the pathway for citizenship for the Dreamers. They also, for example, there is something called the Flores settlement. Basically, it's a 1997 law that limits the amount of time immigrant families could be kept in detention for 20 days. This Republican bill, and this is the part that the president supports, they want to extend the time that these immigrant families could be held in detention beyond 20 days. Now, whether that's constitutional or not, whether judges will go along with it or not is one thing, but that's what this bill seems to want to do. But again, anything that mentions pathway to citizenship for people here illegally, and that's aimed at the Dreamers, conservatives will say this is amnesty. So when you have almost a united Democratic front voting no, and you have conservatives perhaps voting no because it's too lenient, I don't see how this bill passes either. And it's bad. You know, this is Paul Ryan does not like to bring, no party leader wants to bring a bill to the floor that could fail. And this just shows once again that the Republicans are not on the same page on immigration. And with only a couple of months to go before the election, this is not what the Republicans want to be talking about.
So, Ken, should we talk about the jacket?
You know something? You heard a little hesitation in my voice, and my first instinct was to say, no, why do we have to talk about that? But I think actually this fascinates me. This is, of course, we're talking about the Melania Trump going down to Texas to visit some kids in detention centers wearing a jacket that says, I really don't care, do you? This is coming after Donald Trump, President Trump, has been very intemperate, you could say, about how he feels about immigrants. He says we should ship them the hell back. And somehow Melania Trump was going to have the more humane face on the policy by going down and trying to bring her charm and her, you know, or the power of her office to deal with these children, to wear a jacket that says, I really don't care, do you? And then the president says, well, the reason she wore this is because it shows that she doesn't believe the fake news media. It basically negates the whole purpose for her trip to Texas to begin with. So I don't know. It's not been explained. Her office said that's not why she wore the jacket. It's just the jacket was the hashtag that Melania Trump supporters have been using. But it makes no sense to me why in an effort to try to make put on a real more of a human face on all of this, to wear a jacket with such an incendiary message. It makes no sense.
And do we really know?
Again,
what that message meant?
Well, no, I mean, that's exactly it. Her office said it didn't mean anything. It's just a jacket. And Donald Trump said, no, that's because it refers to the fake news media. And Melania Trump knows how dishonest they are. And she no longer cares. That's what the president said. So if that's true, then that it just doesn't seem right to me. It doesn't make sense. And like so many other things, I scratch my head when it's all over and say, what was the purpose of that? So
yeah, there's still a bit of a mystery there. There's some mystery with that. It's strange.
Yeah, there is. There is, and everybody's trying to read things into it. And I just don't know. I just don't know. And if you're looking for some great insight, so to speak, from me on this, I just don't know what to make of it. It just in the wake of everything else going on, this seemed like a distraction that made less sense than almost anything else we've been seeing.
So let's move along to talk about some of the social media-fueled incidents we saw of protest over the weekend on this policy. One of the more surprising developments was when members of Trump's administration were at restaurants shaming people. Is this the first time we've seen this? Is this unusual?
This is another upsetting development, and I don't know what to make of it, basically. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen this before. Of course, we have seen the president shame people on social media and in rallies and things like that, and mocking people and shaming them. And just the other day, Mike Huckabee, Sarah Huckabee Sanders' father, the former governor of Arkansas, tweeted something, a picture of some menacing-looking, Latino-looking men, gang members, and he said, this is Nancy Pelosi's campaign committee to help the Democrats win back the House. So we kind of expect that kind of stuff from administration or defenders of the administration, but now you're seeing progressives do the thing. They kind of hooted Sarah Huckabee Sanders out of a restaurant in Virginia. Kirsten Nielsen, the Department of Homeland Security administrator, was also hooted and hollered at, mocked when she was at a restaurant. Maxine Waters, the California congresswoman, said that whenever we see members of the administration, we should heckle them. You know, the famous Michelle Obama quote that when they go low, we should go high. Progressives are not learning that issue. And basically, it just brings us all down to the Trump level. And it's kind of disheartening to watch it. But there's such anger out there. And to say that, well, they started it, so therefore we're doing the same thing, that's not a good answer. But I don't know what the good answer to this in such a toxic atmosphere when it comes to politics.
Yeah, toxic is a good word. It's just mean-spirited. I would think there would be a backlash about this.
Well, there are some people who think this could very well help Donald Trump, that if everybody's nasty, then there's no good guys, and maybe it discourages the progressives from even voting whereas Trump could say they're worse than we are because they're doing these terrible tactics, when we know, when all you have to do is listen to the tapes of so many rallies the president has been at that saying that, you know, let's punch that protester and I'd beat him up or something. And he just says these things that riles up the crowd, incites the crowd. And again, I think when the left does what he's been doing, when they do what Trump has been doing all along, nobody wins.
I'm talking with political junkie Ken Rudin about President Trump's reversal on the policy of separating immigrant children and parents seeking asylum at the border. Ken, it doesn't appear that the Trump administration was expecting this kind of reaction to their zero tolerance policy. Has this gone according to plan, do you think, or does it seem like they're scrambling?
Oh, absolutely not. Look, I mean, the president will never apologize or admit he's wrong, but the closest we've gotten to that was his executive order. I mean, this is a policy that he defended all along. It's one thing. It's so remarkable. You know, your opening question was, does he blame the Democrats? Does he have any case to make? Well, no, he doesn't. But not only did he blame the Democrats, but at the same time, Jeff Sessions and he said, this is a great policy. So which is it? So I kind of think that the outcry, those pictures of the kids separated from their parents crying, and whether they were actual kids being separated from their parents is another matter completely. The pictures have affected people around the world, let alone right in this country. And the last thing the Republicans want to be seen is heartless, again, with just a bunch of months to go before the November 5th elections. So the president did back down. But, you know, we saw this once before. After the Parkland shooting in Florida, President Trump was at a White House conference, and he said, well, you know, we shouldn't fear the NRA. They're bad guys. And everybody said, wow, the president really is getting the message. And basically, he almost, in a sense, diffused the problem, whereas in a few days later, he said good things about the NRA again. So I don't know if the executive order was just to give him some buying time, because certainly his rhetoric has not gone down. He has not backed down on anything. He's talking about deporting people as soon as they get here without any kind of due process. And so, I mean, whatever it is, the Republican Party could pay the price. I mean, of course, the more conservative element of the party says this is a party, this is a nation of laws, and the president is urging people to follow the law. But again, when you see those kind of photographs about these little kids crying around the country, it could only help the Democrats in November.
So let's switch gears, Ken, here, and talk a little bit about the Supreme Court. They have disposed of the last gerrymandering case on their docket this term. They sent it back to the lower court to decide if the plaintiffs had standing. Some people were expecting a bombshell when the court accepted three big redistricting cases. Now they have all turned out to be narrow decisions. So what's your take on this?
You know something, that's a big surprise as well. Everybody was looking forward to the Wisconsin case. This was a case of the Wisconsin State Assembly, where even though the Republicans only won 48% of the vote, they wound up drawing the districts to give themselves an overwhelming majority in the state assembly. And so Democrats took them to court saying this is an unfair partisan redistricting. And then also in North Carolina, that was last week. And they basically said they sent the bill back to Wisconsin saying, well, they don't have the right, they don't have the standing to sue statewide. They have to go district by district. And so everybody said, well, maybe this week's North Carolina decision, where Democrats are also accusing Republicans of unfair partisan redistricting, they thought, well, maybe the North Carolina thing would be a major bombshell in how the court feels about, you know, this gerrymandering. And yet the court didn't do anything with that either. They also sent it back to the state, to North Carolina, to be relitigated. So, for, you know, for all our, we're holding our breath thinking this is, the court is going to really say something one way or the other about, you know, this partisan redistricting. It didn't happen. And so I'm not sure I don't know if there's a message there. I don't know if the Supreme Court plans to do anything about the gerrymandering at all. But right now, two surprises back to back within a week of each other, North Carolina this week, Wisconsin last week, when basically nothing happened. The final result is the court punted, and we didn't get any indication what the court feels about this process.
And, of course, we're still waiting to hear something on the Janus case.
We are indeed.
The big union case deciding whether you have to pay dues or you
don't. Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you. The little brain freeze was right there. I think that's the big remaining case for the court. I mean, we're coming down to the final days of the court this term. And, of course, the use of union funds and withholding union funds is a big case. And, of course, we should also point out that it's the primaries tomorrow in several states. Mitt Romney's comeback begins in the Republican Republican primary in Utah, where he's favored to win the seat, being given up by Orrin Hatch. Mitt Romney will be interested to see what kind of Republican he is in the Senate, because we all remember in 2016, he was a very vociferous Trump critic, although he kind of groveled a little bit when he wanted to be Secretary of State. A lot of people are waiting to see what kind of Republican Senator Mitt Romney will be. And just a point of fact, his niece is Ronna Romney McDaniel, who chairs the Republican National Committee. So I don't know how much off the reservation he really will be, although a lot of people think he could become an independent voice.
Always a pleasure, Ken. That's political junkie Ken Rudin. Thank you so much for being on Insight with me this morning, Ken.
Thank you. And next time, I'll be prepared for the Janus decision.
Okay. Didn't mean to throw you.
No. Well, yeah. I deserve it every now and then. Thanks, Beth.
We have more on our website at capradio.org/insight. You are listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.